Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Jumping Monkeys would like to thank CashFly for the bandwidth for this podcast. CACHEFLY.com. CashFly. This is Jumping Monkeys with Megan Maroney and Leo Laporte. Episode 39 for March 22nd, 2008. Susan Ettlinger on autism. Jumping Monkeys is proudly brought to you by Audible.com for your free audiobook. Some great kids' books, too. Visit audible.com/monkeys. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. It's time for Jumping Monkeys. That's Megan Maroney over on your left.
Yeah, that's me. Me, Megan Maroney, and that's Leo Laporte on your right. Or maybe your right.
My left, your right. I'm very good. Very bad at that.
We should just...
stage left.
Yeah.
Stage right.
Could we do it so like one was in one earphone and the other one was in the other earphone?
We could do this in stereo. We do it in mono. You know, actually, a number of people have requested, especially with the podcast that have a lot of voices, that we do it in stereo. We did one once in Dolby Surround.
Ooh.
So that like Dvorak was behind you.
Oh,
but that
nice.
Scared people.
I'll bet. It scares me just the thought of it.
Whoa.
So today, Leo, we're going to be talking to Susan Ettlinger. She's a mother and a writer, and she writes for the Silicon Valley Moms blog and Babysitter's Mom Formation, and her blog is thefamilyroomblog.com, and she mostly writes about autism and special needs and is documenting her family's experience and has some great resources for other families whose children are on the autism spectrum.
So this is a kind of a specialized mom blog for moms of autistic children.
Right.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. Just basically people all over the spectrum. So, I think it's going to be interesting to talk to her. And so first, why don't we get right into the phone number?
I see you're on your outline, on your show rundown. Item one, phone number.
Call us. Our number is 707-981-4602. We'd love to hear from you.
That's our Grand Central number, just so you know. It's not Megan's home number. Like, you could call it in the middle of the night and nobody would get upset with you.
Right.
It would be okay if you did that. In fact, no human will answer.
Exactly.
I say that and I think sometimes people laugh, but... I'm shy. If I'm more likely to call a number if I know no human.
Oh, answer. Yeah.
You are like that too?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Definitely. Well, I mean, if I was going to call a show, I think I'd probably prefer not to.
So
have
no
a human
will answer.
Answer
this. Yeah. You will have the opportunity to speak your piece without us mocking you in any way until later on the show.
Right. I think actually, I'm always happy to hear a voicemail rather than a human. I don't like to talk to actual people.
I knew I liked you for some reason. I knew I liked you. We do have, I'm looking, we have a few in here. This
oh, good.
Is not an empty mailbox.
Oh, good. We'll get to those at the end of the show. But now it's time for the Spend, Save, Give. Each week we talk about one way to spend your money, one way to save a little money, and one way to give back to the community or to the world at large. And the first is Spend. This came from Steve from Indianapolis. He recommended the Moo sticker books.
I love Moo.
I love Moo, too. They're... I love Moo.
I love Moo, too.
I think all their products are really great. What you do is you can take your pictures from Flickr or Vox or Facebook, and they'll create cool things, little books, or these in particular are sticker books. And
neat.
They're really cool and pretty inexpensive. I mean, you could buy sticker paper and print out pictures, but that's actually, I think that would end up costing more if you're talking about like the ink and everything, and then you have to cut them out.
Right. And Mrs. Grossman doesn't have pictures of my children at the pyramids, so.
No, Mrs. Grossman is the sticker factory in our town, and those stickers are everywhere. I remember those.
I don't think it's just our town. I think Mrs. Grossman is famous worldwide, isn't
she? She is famous, but the factory is here in our town.
Yeah, we know Mrs. Grossman.
But it's those heart stickers. I remember those from my youth.
Yeah. And was it Mrs. Grossman then?
Uh-huh.
Kids?
Yeah.
See, we didn't do stickers when I was a kid. At some point, stickers became the kid thing to do.
Right.
And you always could tell somebody has kids when they drive by in their van and all in the back seat has all the stickers on
stickers
the window.
Stickers, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to leave the stickers on my window so people will always think I have a kid, a little kid. It's so cute.
When does stickers end? When did kids stop playing with stickers?
8, 9.
Yeah.
10. Mm. It depends because you can get very creative, of course, with rubber stamps and stickers. And you can, I mean, my Jennifer will use them sometimes in cards and stuff. She was just did a Abby's birthday card with stickers and stamps and drawings.
Aww.
You know, it's multimedia then.
Yeah.
Mixed media.
Exactly. Yeah. Mixed media stickers. So anyway,
cool.
Yeah.
I love Moo. Moo does business cards too. I first became aware of Moo and Merlin Mann. Gave me his little Moo card.
Oh, the Moo cards. Yeah, that was their first product, I think.
Those.
And yeah, they're little cards that you can print your pictures. And I think you can take other people's art and get, you know, a box of those too.
They're very high quality. That's the neat thing. Then now they do greeting cards, postcards, sticker books.
Yeah, I think they're from England.
Are they?
From Charlie's hometown, maybe.
Charlie.
Remember Charlie bit me?
Charlie bit me. So I'm wondering, maybe do cows in England not, you know, because in, you know, in China, dogs don't go woof, woof, bark, bark. They go, I don't know, meow. I don't know. They do something different. Maybe, do you think British cows don't go moo?
I don't know. I don't know. It's a good question.
Call us. Call us at that number that we gave out.
All right, let's get to the save. Now I'm going to save some money on a do-it-yourself dinosaur skeleton toy.
This made me feel like a bad dad. This project.
This is the Chickensaurus skeleton from Geek Dad Kevin Kelly on the Wired blog, Geek Dad.
I hate Kevin Kelly. Not only is he editor-in-chief of, or was the editor-in-chief of Wired, brilliant guy who wrote a seminal book on the hive mind. He's also a better father than I am. I can live with somebody who's a workaholic but a lousy parent. But you can't do both.
Yeah. So what this is you buy a whole chicken. He recommends getting one from an Asian market.
Because it comes with
like
the head.
Yeah, you need the head. And then taking off all the skin and meat and then...
By simmering it. You make chicken
right.
stock.
Yeah, use the meat, of course.
And the meat falls off and makes a great stock, but then...
Then putting the bones back together.
Now, so here's the funny thing you do with the bones, because now you need to clean them.
Right.
You put them in Drano.
Oh, really? Is that what that says?
Yeah.
Oh.
Or any drain cleaner. It's lye.
Yeah.
And it dissolves.
Makes
sodium,
sense.
Sodium hydroxide with a little bleach. It by the way, this is adult supervision. Please.
Right,
this is very
older
dangerous
kids.
Stuff. But it then cleans off the meat without... and you leave it for a day.
Mm-hmm.
But then the bones are clean. But then... They're brown.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have perfect bones, but now you have to bleach them.
Mm.
That way they are bleached white. And then a glue gun.
Yeah. I'm still getting over the Drano and bleach. And
oh, you didn't realize.
Bringing up like
realize,
mafia.
You didn't realize what was involved here. You just saw the above the fold, the amazing picture of a chicken.
Right. I saw the other live chicken too, but
you didn't scroll down to find out how you do this.
If you're a vegetarian.
You're typical.
Yeah.
You're a typical meat eater. You don't want to know where the Chickenosaurus comes from.
That's true.
I want to do this.
If you're a vegetarian, perhaps this isn't a link you want to follow, but we'll put it in the show notes.
Well, Chickensaurus. The chicken's dead already anyway.
But true.
The thing that's interesting, I like this line, extra tiny bones at the end, so what? Leave them out. But the thing is, now in this case, he and his son, and he did this with his son who looks like he's about 12, 11 or 12, they recreated a chicken.
Right.
Which, by the way, when you just have the bones, does look like a dinosaur.
Mm-hmm.
Really does.
He made it in a pouncing pose, too.
Yeah. Don't you? I mean, that's what they always do.
Yeah.
But there's a book on this called T-Rex to Go, Build Your Own from Chicken Bones. And they say you don't have to make a chicken.
What can you make? Like a
anything.
Bat
anything. You've
something?
Got bones. They said, here's how to do a T-Rex.
Oh, yeah.
So, which is a kind of neat idea because... I mean, kids love dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
So I would start set with a chicken just because that looks... Then you realize the bird is related to the dinosaur.
Right, yeah.
You also learn a lot about bone structure and you know, skeletal structure and how the spine works. I mean, I think this is so brilliant. It makes me so angry.
You could still do this with Henry.
I hate you, Kevin
Kelly. It's not too late.
You think he'd do it with me?
I don't know.
He might. I might have been... It's really an 11-year-old that would do this.
Mm.
Oh. Man,
you need to go out and rent yourself an 11-year-old. Anyone got one for Leo?
No, it's okay. I'm going to propose this to Henry. I'll let you know if this works.
Okay,
because I'd love to do this.
Okay,
maybe you know if I just did it.
Right, and you just went to the kitchen. You're doing it. Yeah.
Just a little Drano.
Abby might be interested too.
Abby would totally dig this. Maybe Abby and Henry should do it, and I can stand back.
Right.
There is a online. There are guides to chicken anatomy that you can use.
Is Abby a vegetarian?
Comes and goes.
She might not.
I don't know if she'd
so
have the. Well, she's high school sophomore. I think this is the year or next year. Maybe maybe they do it in junior high. Maybe Henry's about to do it where they do the dissections.
Oh yeah,
that'll get you off of meat.
All right, let's move on to the give. This is back giving back to the earth. This is a link from GNM Parents, Grasshopper New Media. Have you ever seen this site? They've got just a collection of bloggers that I find really interesting. But this is tips on a greener birthday party.
Oh, hallelujah.
Yeah, so there's just some simple tips. You know, maybe don't give gifts. Have it outside. Give greener favors or no favors at all. They have a link to like a place where you can buy environmentally friendly favors. So I thought it was pretty interesting. Yeah. And
you can do what Kevin Kelly does and buy carbon credits for your birthday party.
Right. Is that what he does?
No.
Kevin Kelly.
He's my bête noire now. My chicken bête noire.
So yeah, that's gnmparents.com, low impact birthday party, and we'll put that link.
As opposed to gmoparents.com.
No, GNM, Grasshopper New Media.
Not genetically modified parents.
No. And if you have tips for greener birthday parties, you can email me at megan@twit.tv or call us.
We love that number, 707. I'm so pathetic. 98. We don't make any money off these calls. It's not like they give us a dime. 707-981-4602.
It just gives our show more flavor, I think. All right. Are we ready for the Audible pick?
I'd love to do an Audible pick.
What is Audible, Leo Laporte?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Megan Maroney. Audible is a parent's best friend. You
and know? Our sponsor.
Oh, and our sponsor. This is a commercial, in case you didn't notice. When we first started doing ads, people said, dude, you got to tell us when you're going to do an ad. You can't just launch into an ad.
I know. That's what happens when you really like the product.
I said, I thought, well, can't you tell? It's an ad. I mean, but no, you're right, because we're talking about something we know and use.
Put on your ad voice.
You know, Audible.com is a great way to read more books. I think if you're a parent of young kids or a newborn, Audible would be such a boon. Those times, those 2 a.m. feedings, and then you're up. I remember when Abby was like 2 or 3 years old, we didn't have to feed her anymore, but she would, for some unaccountable reason, want to play in the middle of the night. And I can remember middle of the night just sitting there, and you can't look at a computer. She knows. But you could put on your headphones subtly and listen to a book while you're playing blocks. Audible is a way to get more reading done, whether you're driving, exercising. I take it to the gym, of course.
And last week, we actually talked about a guy who listens to the book that his daughter has been assigned in high school.
That's
or
a good
junior
idea.
High. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a
that's
great
something
idea.
Else in case you don't want to play blocks with your headphones.
the nice thing.
It doesn't work for all parents.
It doesn't. It probably shouldn't. The nice thing about Audible is they do... have 45,000 plus titles, so you're pretty sure you're going to get the books that your kid's listening to or reading. And such great titles, such great stuff. I just the readers are the best, and it's instant satisfaction, because once you're a member of Audible.com, you just go there and you get the book and you download it, and you know, a minute later you've got it. You can listen on your computer, you can burn it to CDs to listen in the car, of course most portable devices, even the Kindle, and of course all the Apple devices support Audible. It's a great way to listen. I read more books with Audible. Was it you who told me about The Dog of the South?
No, The Dog in the what?
The Dog of the South.
No.
It's a comic novel. It is so good. I can't remember where I found out about it. Oh, that's what I'm listening to now. But you have a recommendation.
I do. This is for kids. Perhaps you all remember it. Tales of the Fourth Grade Nothing by Judy Blume.
Oh, Judy Blume.
Did you read Tales of the Fourth Grade Nothing to your kids?
I don't know if I read that one. I've read Judy Blume
Fudge
books.
And Super Fudge.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah,
oh,
this
she's
is,
so good.
This is the story of Peter Hatcher and his 3-year-old brother, Fudge. And she, Judy Blume, actually reads it.
Let's hear it. Wait a minute.
Okay, let's hear.
I gotta hear Judy Blume.
Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing. By Judy Blume.
We've listened to her before, haven't we? That sounds
Chapter
familiar.
One.
I don't
the
think
big
so.
Winner.
We've listened to Beverly Cleary.
I won Dribble at Jimmy Fargo's birthday party. All the other guys got to take home goldfish in little plastic bags. I won him because I guessed there were 348 jelly beans in Mrs. Fargo's jar. Really, there were 423, she told us later. Still.
I love it.
If
it's like mom reading to you.
Oh, yeah. If you've read that book, you know what happens to Dribble at the end is just horrifying And I'll just leave it at that. But, you know, it's a good book for, I think, a little younger than fourth grade.
Yeah, as usual. It's aspirational.
Yeah, Annabella and I just listened to it, and she loved it. She loved it, especially because he's got a three-year-old brother who is exactly like her three-year-old brothers.
Right.
You know, who fly off the jungle gym and break the teeth off, you know, their front teeth.
They have a lot of Judy Blume.
They do. Well, she wrote a lot. And, you know, it's interesting because Judy Blume is an author you can really grow with, because there's a lot of books that are, you know, not appropriate.
We did
for
Sheila the
kids.
Great, I think. Which,
oh yeah, that's Peter Hatcher's neighbor, Sheila. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're actually reading that one right now.
Great book.
Mm-hmm.
I miss those days. I wish I could just tie my kids down and make them listen to me read. I really do. I loved reading to them.
They won't let you read to them anymore.
Mm-hmm. I have to sneak up on them. Like when Henry is really groggy, he's just waking up in the morning. I'll read him a chapter. He's too sleepy and weak to stop me.
Oh.
He can't make a fist yet. He can't beat me.
Yeah.
I just miss it. It was so much fun. But maybe it's one of those things where you enjoyed it more than they did.
I don't know. I think they sit still. They're enjoying it, right?
I think they enjoy it. It's not... I don't think it's egotistical. Well, maybe it is when I do it.
I don't think. You have to... You should...
You
reading to your children
read
is not...
like this.
Reading to your children is not egotistical.
No. It's the best thing you can do for your kids.
It is
Everybody
the
agrees.
Best thing you can do.
It's a wonderful way to bond with them. It's a wonderful way to But this is not about that. This is about somebody else reading to your kids. You can't always read to your kids. And you know what? You can. Do you ever do this? Will you ever sit with Annabella and listen together?
In the car, we do.
We did a lot of that in the car.
And sometimes sometimes if they're just acting crazy and I'll just put it on the iPod, you know, and play it on the speakers calm everybody down.
Great idea. And they do, too. Don't they?
Yeah.
So much better than sticking them in front of the TV.
Yeah.
Audible.com. Yes, books for grownups, books for kids, books for people like me. If you want to get a free book, could be Judy Blume, could be anything. Could be the new John Adams. That's coming up on HBO. I'm looking forward to that. Actually, it's already started. Just go to audible.com/monkeys and sign up there, and you'll get a credit for a book. And we thank you so much, Audible, for giving us a chance to plug books, which is kind of the best part of this ad.
I love
the chance to talk about books.
Yeah, me too. I'm never going to run out.
Nope.
So I think
speaking of books, or actually blogs now, yes?
Yeah, are we going to talk to Susan?
We will. Susan, tell us a little bit about her before we get started. Her blog is called The Family Room.
TheFamilyRoomBlog.com. And Susan has a 4.5-year-old son, Isaac, who she describes as a natural comedian and believes that rhyming, elevators, cheese crackers, Dora the Explorer, and YouTube represent the 9th through 13 wonders of the world, respectively.
It's funny because that's exactly how I feel.
And Susan's been writing about autism and special needs to document her family's experience and also to offer resources to people on her blog. She's been quoted in the New York Times and the San Jose Mercury News. And she also regularly writes on Baby Center's Mom Formation blog and the Silicon Valley Moms blog. And I thought it would be great to have her on because she's just been so great to so many people offering resources on autism. And
let's say hi to Susan. Yeah. Wait a minute, that was too easy. I said, let's say hi to Susan. And she said, hi. Boy, your timing is impeccable.
Welcome to Jumpy Monkey, Susan.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Well, why don't we just start off with your story, with your own experience with Isaac.
Sure. So Isaac is 4.5 now, and when he was about 15 months old, our pediatrician referred us to a developmental pediatrician because he wasn't walking or talking. And it was kind of a shock because we have a whole lot of late talkers in our family and a whole lot of sort of, you know, bookish, introspective people. So there was really nothing in his childhood or in his behavior as a baby that gave us any indication that anything was significantly amiss. And then, you know, right around that sort of 15-month time frame, he started missing developmental milestones, some of which he met later on, but just not when he was supposed to. So we took him to see a developmental pediatrician, and we actually went back a few times over the course of the following year and ended up with a diagnosis of what's called PDD-NOS, which is on the autism spectrum and is really what happens when you don't fulfill all the diagnostic criteria for autism, but sort of most of them.
It's kind of like half winning the prize.
Yeah, it's the consolation prize for autism, basically.
So for people that don't know, what is the autism spectrum? What does that mean when people say that?
So autism has kind of three categories to it, right? There's the, you know, what you think of as that sort of social piece, the impairment in social interaction, you know, what sometimes people think about as a lack of interest in other people, but could actually mean something else. There's also a second piece, which is related to communication, which is why any kid with a speech delay is probably going to get an evaluation at some point or another. And then the third piece is what they call sort of stereotypical behaviors and or restricted and repetitive movements. It's the things that you think about, like rocking or flicking your fingers or insistence on, you know, first cereal, then milk, then socks, then shoes, and if not, then meltdown. And so... there's a whole, you know, in the diagnostic manual, there's just a whole, you know, you take three from column A and two from column B, and then you basically, you know, get the jackpot. And so if a child does not fulfill all those criteria, they get usually a PDD NOS diagnosis, and that stands for Pervasive Developmental Disorder Not Otherwise Specified, which is Dr. Speak for miscellaneous. And then there are other sort of categories like Asperger syndrome, which has some very specific characteristics. Children who tend to focus on, you know, they could be brilliant at like entomology at age five and not be able to tie their shoes, be hyperverbal, but have trouble with social interaction. And then there are some other, you know, categories, some of which are seem to be more genetic.
So what advice do you have for parents who've just received a diagnosis like this one or anywhere on the spectrum?
Well, I mean, I would say the first thing is don't do what we did.
Learn from our mistakes.
Please. Which is that we just, you know, we were pretty devastated. And I think a lot of it came from, a lot of it came from this feeling that, you know, we walked into the doctor's office with one child, you know, in our mind, and we walked out sort of with this other kind of pathological child.
Right.
And, you know, the biggest thing to remember is that you know your children or child better than anybody else. And you know what their strengths and weaknesses are. You know where they need to develop. You know, and don't forget that, because little kids, you know, this happens, these diagnoses happen typically when children are very, very young. And very, very young children do lots and lots of weird things.
Yes, they do.
Well, and this is being diagnosed more and more. I mean, it seems like it's on the upswing. I don't know if it is on the upswing or just being caught more or...
You know, there's a lot of controversy about it. You know, and I would say that, you know, in my opinion, and I think this is backed up a lot by the science, there's a lot more diagnosis happening because there are a lot of children being diagnosed who might not have been diagnosed 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I wonder, because in the tech industry, you see a lot of people with many of these behaviors.
Yeah, and we love them for that.
Yeah,
you know?
That's what makes them special.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And I'm thinking of maybe people like Bill Gates even.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are lots of people who are sort of alleged to have some kind of autism spectrum thing.
Is there such a thing as mild autism?
Sure. But there's this funny kind of false, you know, comparison between, you know, what they call high functioning and low functioning autism. So, you know, everybody said to us early on, you know, as if this was the best thing in the world, your child is so high functioning,
right.
You know, and what that meant is he kind of looks, you know, normalish in a lot of life.
It's an insult almost to say that.
It's odd because if you look at, you know, somebody like, for example, this woman, Amanda Baggs, who David Woolman wrote about in his piece in Wired this last month. You know, if you were to meet Amanda, run into her in a store, you would see somebody who doesn't communicate, who has very, you know, eccentric movements, who can't meet your eyes, who looks extremely disabled. Then if you didn't know who she was and you went to her website and you started reading her,
right,
you'd have no idea. She's just this incredibly witty, articulate person.
So, completely different image.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So that different image is based on the fact that she communicates in a different way through the internet versus in person.
And, you know, a lot of sort of social and cultural assumptions about what normal is supposed to mean.
Right. And there's a lot of people who communicate a lot better on the internet than they do in person.
Or they're better writers than they are speakers.
Yeah.
Right.
Or they're better with one person than they are with 20 people.
Yeah, we should recognize those differences. But at the same time, if somebody needs help, it's also appropriate to get them help.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we had this kind of funny schism in the way we thought about Isaac. We, you know, we got him every single possible therapy that we thought would work for him, as long as he didn't seem to resist it or hate it. Hmm. And then, you know, in our minds, we thought, my husband actually had a really great way of expressing this. He said, you know, this diagnosis is current events. It's not prophecy.
Oh, interesting. I
and
like that.
So, yeah. So we thought about, you know, who he is as a child, who he is as a person, and that, and we tried not to sort of mess with that. But at the same time, if he needs occupational therapy because his upper body strength isn't as, you know, as developed as some other children his age, then we'll get that for him.
Right.
And we'll try not to get all in a twist about it.
Right. So how old is Isaac now?
He's 4 and a half.
And how is he doing?
He's great. He's really an amazing kid. He's incredibly bright. He's really funny. He's really energetic. You know, if you saw him in a social situation, you may or may not be able to tell that something's different about him. And I kind of say that guardedly because, you know, I don't want to imply a judgment that, like, that's better. But, you know, I think Isaac is the sort of child who really illustrates that a lot of the kind of autism diagnosis stuff is way under the surface, and you just can't tell when a kid's 4 and a half what they're going to be like when they're 14 or 24. So he can get away with a lot of things that kids that age can get away with, you know, that then look odd when you're 8 or 14 or 20.
You said something interesting I want to emphasize or underscore or point it out. You said he's very bright.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people think that autism is a form of mental retardation.
They do. And I think that's because the way that intelligence is tested highly, highly values verbal communicative ability. So, you know, one of the things that is a strength of his, he has an extraordinary memory. And at 4 and a half, he can count from 1 to 10 in about 8 languages.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Now, you know, whether that will translate to an actual language facility later on, I don't know. But, you know, not many people, I think, have a kid who wakes up in the morning, looks at you, smiles, and says, konnichiwa.
Right. So really, it's about being different, not about, do you consider it a disability?
You know, we don't think of him as disabled we don't think of him in that way.
Lesser abled.
Yeah, we
differently
don't.
Abled.
Differently abled, but you know, at the same time, it's very situational. So when we're home with him and we're hanging out, he's super verbal and social, and he has a great time. And you know, when friends of the family come over, he flirts and talks, and you know, then he needs his break. But we take him to Whole Foods, and he's, you know, pretty much out there and doing what kids his age do. But if we take him to, say, a birthday party with other children his age, all of a sudden he starts looking very different.
Mm-hmm.
Because he gets really overwhelmed and
right.
He doesn't know what he's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really does get back to that question of normal. And with this like hyper-parenting world that we live in, especially in the U.S., it's like last week we interviewed, or a few weeks ago, we interviewed two doctors about ODD, oppositional defiant disorder. And I was listening to our podcast and I was listening to myself, and it just seemed like as I was interviewing them, I kept asking, well, what's normal? Are my kids normal? I just want my kids to be normal. That's all. And it was, I mean, what can you say to parents who are trying to get over that?
Well, you know, again, I think my husband had a great way to put this. He said, you know, why is it that we spend our entire lives trying to stand out and be different and have our strengths and sort of, you know, express ourselves, and then we have kids and we want them to be like everybody else?
Yeah.
And, you know, there is this kind of hyper-competitive parenting culture that we have, and,
I'm going to say it's a little different. I think we just want our kids to fit in.
Yeah.
We don't want them to do whether it's gay, autistic, different in any way. We don't want them to stand out and have the discomfort of being a kid in a world where, you know, being different is challenging.
Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard.
We don't want them to have hard times of any kind. And that's part of the problems with modern parenting is we kind of constantly coddling our kids so they don't have any tough times.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely agree.
You know, we just want to protect them.
You know, but it's impossible to tease apart, you know, in a child. You know, is he doing this because of autism, or is he doing this because this is what 4-year-olds do?
Right. It must be very difficult.
Well, we kind of decided to just try to stop. And,
right.
And, you know, that's sort of like, you know, saying, okay, I'm going to stop now.
But don't ask that question. What is normal?
Well, I only have a really inane answer, which is normal is what's normal for you.
Right.
But I actually think that that's true because, you know, if you look at, you know, one of the big trends right now in the sort of whole autism world is neurodiversity, right? So the adult autistic people who have essentially kind of reclaimed autism and said that, in fact, it is a difference. It's just a different wiring. And why should we, you know, privilege sort of neurotypical people as being better?
Neurotypical. I like that.
That's what they call it.
I love it.
There's a rumor. This is totally a tangent. But there's a rumor that Microsoft NT was named NT to stand for neurotypical because it was engineered by software engineers who thought this was the first release of Microsoft that was actually so easy, even a dumb, you know, NT person.
So Windows NT was...
Yeah.
I believe it. I totally believe it.
So it's probably... I couldn't find it on Snopes. I actually asked a few people and nobody's been able to verify
it.
We're
going to spread it.
Yeah.
Spread it and see what happens.
Windows for the neurotypicals. Yeah, the neurodiversity movement is really interesting. I've just recently begun to read about that. Just the idea that... You know, there's just people that are on this, you know, some people are neurotypical and some people are neurodiverse.
Yeah.
But it's controversial, right? Because it's what Leo was talking about earlier. If some people actually do need help, they might not be getting it if they just think,
that's right. That's right. And I think, you know, here, this is where age becomes really important because, you know, we sort of have two, I guess, I don't know, philosophies about this. One is that anything that we do with Isaac has to respect him as a person. So we do behavioral therapies with him, but they're very, very centered on what he wants to do. And, you know, the behavioral stuff has gotten a really bad rap, but there's been a lot of improvements in it over the years to the point where now really a lot of it is led by the child. And what it's done for him is really given him a sense of confidence in learning to do things that are really basic, like put on his own clothes or become potty trained, which he's completely potty trained. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's important. I mean, and there are a lot of things that we do just as parents of any child that that are behavioral. You know, don't do that again or I'll take away your, you know, blah, blah privileges. But this whole business, you know, there are a lot of people who would actually call me and parents who've put their children in therapy, a CUREBIE, CUREBIE, right, because we're somehow disrespecting our child by putting them in therapy. And I think, you know, when you're talking about a four-year-old, what parent would just sort of say, well, you know, I think I'm just going to let my child, you know, grow up organically and I'm not really going to tell him or her how to behave in society and what to do and I'm not really going to teach them how to do. I mean, it seems kind of silly when you're talking about a four-year-old to me versus someone who's an adult.
To some degree, all parenting is about modifying a child's behavior so they fit into society.
Absolutely.
I don't know where it crosses the line to, you know, denying their individuality. I mean, my kids' individuality are eat with your fingers, and, you know, I don't want them to do that.
Right.
I don't know if that's harming them to say stop, but I think that I have to.
Yeah, well, I think where it starts to get tricky is where people start to talk about curing autism.
Yeah.
You know, and...
There is a group of people who believe it's a curable disease?
Well, not that it is a curable disease, but that it should be a curable disease.
We should be able to fix it.
We should be able to cure it, you know? We should be able to make children who have autism just like everybody else.
What is your thought about what the causes of it? Is it just a difference in brain?
You know, gosh, it is like the absolute multi-million dollar question. I personally don't think that that Isaac's, you know, autism spectrum diagnosis was caused by any, you know, vaccination or anything like that, just because he was consistently who he was. But there are children who have had adverse reactions. It's really hard to tell whether that's related to, you know, external thing.
I'm not necessarily asking what the root cause of it is, but just what is his brain different, you think, than yours?
In some ways.
He sees things differently, you see?
In some ways, I think he does.
Yeah.
In many ways, I think we see things very similarly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it is, I have a sort of, you know, am of the opinion that the more time you spend thinking about autism, the more autistic you get because you just begin to kind of pick it all apart and become very repetitive and over-focused on it. So that's something I'm trying not to do.
I sometimes feel like that actually is the case that, I mean, the human brain is so complex, just a little somewhere.
Yeah.
Who knows what the outcome could be? And it might, and we all have that feeling sometimes of being over analytic or, you know, over focused or, gosh, you take me to a party. I sit in the corner. I'm overwhelmed by all the stimulus.
Well, and how many times do you go, you know, do you talk to somebody and they say, oh, he's so ADD?
Yeah, well, just ask Megan. I'm going to stop doing a crossword puzzle now.
Really, I'm stopping now.
Yeah.
Now.
So it could just be a matter of degree.
I think it is. I mean, I really think, and I believe that if I took Isaac and I, you know, stuck him in the car and we drove all over the country to 7 different doctors, we'd probably get, you know, maybe not 7 different diagnoses, but more than one.
Now, we have very close friends who have an autistic daughter who is actually, I mean, not very highly functioning. I mean, you wouldn't necessarily, she needs help. She's a teenager now,
mm-hmm.
and she needs a lot of help. So there, and that's the other thing is that there's a spectrum. Autism is a big word covering a lot of behaviors and things.
Yeah. Well, if you think of those three kind of buckets, right, there's the social piece, the communications piece, and the stereotypical piece. And you think about all the different ways, you know, kid could be super verbal and socially very delayed, or they could have all these crazy, you know, kind of movements and tics and things.
Right.
But, you know, so there are all sorts of ways it can manifest. And I think some of them, frankly, are easier to pass than others.
Right. And unfortunately, it is a really large, it covers too much ground to say autism. It's a really omnibus term.
Yeah, I mean, I think of it as sort of like the Guantanamo Bay of, you know,
we don't know what's
categories,
going on in there.
You know, it's sort of the holdings, you know, until, because I suspect, you know, in 10 or 20 years, we're going to have a lot more specificity around these things.
Have you ever looked at kind of things like genetic, you know, gene therapies, or, I mean, looking at what the genetic causes could be? Is there any thought along those lines?
You know, we haven't done any kind of biomedical or genetic testing or anything like that.
Is there an autism gene, I guess I'm asking?
Well, there is evidence that there are genes that, there's some evidence of that. And in fact, I have a friend who's a biologist with a son with Asperger's. And so she kind of, you know, is really knowledgeable about that. And on a good day, I can understand about 60% of her posts.
James Watson, who is the original geneticist, the guy who, with Crick, found DNA, has an autistic son. And I interviewed him, and he is of the opinion that not only is there a gene for it, but he is also of the opinion, and here's a little more informed opinion, that there are many people in the tech industry who have this gene.
Mm-hmm.
And he pointed out several well-known people in the tech industry. He said many of these people have traits of autism.
Right. Right.
Well, Susan, how did you feel about that article? I think you're familiar with it. A few years ago, that came out that said that the rise in autism was caused by, or the rise in Silicon Valley of autism was caused by all of these techie people, all of us geeks meeting each other and
breeding,
mating.
Yeah. Well, you know, I moved to the Bay Area for a reason, right?
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm not married to a tech guy. He's actually a history guy, but
same thing.
Pretty much. Yeah.
There, I mean, come on.
Pretty much. You know, nerds. We find each other. Yeah. I mean, I think it's. I'll tell you what. I mean, I think here's what I think about that, and what I think about the David Wolman piece. I think Wired. You know, for some reason, it takes them about 7 years between these really interesting articles, but they've done these wonderful pieces, and I think, you know, that was a great one. And I actually went to hear a guy named Tony Atwood, who is an internationally recognized Asperger's expert,
mm-hmm.
and he came to Silicon Valley and he spoke in front of about 600 or 700, mostly, you know, parents of children with autism. And you know, he said, whenever I come to Silicon Valley, he said, when I go out in public, I usually play spot the Aspie, you know, and so I go looking for the Asperger's person. And when I come to Silicon Valley, I start looking for the people who don't actually have Asperger's because they're much more rare.
Yeah,
you know, I think that there's something to that,
but it's mild.
Well, I guess maybe I should be more specific. I think there's something to the notion that people with like traits seek each other out.
Yes. Yeah. Is there really considered to be an autism cluster in Silicon Valley? Is that?
I don't know that it's I wouldn't call it a cluster, but I think, you know, we're certainly more focused on it.
Right. I mean, maybe it's because there's more educated and more likely to get our kids diagnosed than other people.
And I think it's partly a California thing.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, but that's what you were saying. I think that speaks to more of the neurodiversity movement, that you wouldn't want geeks to stop mating. I mean, you wouldn't want you wouldn't want to not have Bill Gates. I mean, you wouldn't
Einstein didn't speak till he was six.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Oh, six or something, you know, something fairly out of the
range. He's pretty old. Maybe not sick, but he's pretty old.
And, you know, there was a, I think he's a psychiatrist.
In fact, he's famous. I'm famous for, his sister was just talking about this recently. He would form the sentence in his head. You could see him moving his lips before he would say anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could actually see him rehearse the sentence over and over and then say it. And then look at this kind of difference in brain gave us a person who was able to see into the universe. So, I mean, sometimes these can be very valuable differences.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I wouldn't give up, you know, and a lot of people have said this. I wouldn't, you know, if I had the choice to wake up tomorrow with a different child without, you know, any kind of autism spectrum issues, you know, I would never, ever, ever do it. I would never take the trade. I mean,
because well, Isaac's Isaac.
He's Isaac. Yeah, he's Isaac, and he's, you know, he's just a great kid, and he's so much fun. And, you know, and again, the world is sort of open for him. I mean, we just don't know what it's going to be like.
Right. I love your blog. I think it's a really great way to share this with you.
Thank you.
And he's adorable.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, he's really sweet.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thanks for your blog and for coming on. It's been great.
It was my pleasure.
Susan's website is familyroomblog.com, and she also blogs at Mom Baby Center's Momformation and the Silicon Valley Moms blog. And at your blog, you have tons of resources for parents on the left side, tons of links for parents about autism. And yeah, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Susan.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Boy, that's, it's challenging. I want, you know, we all want to be politically correct. And you want the kids also to have the help they need. And it's a mystery.
Yeah. Well, I think it was interesting. I chose rather to talk to her rather than, you know, another doctor about something like
well,
this because
right in it.
Yeah.
But I'm sure parents of children in any, you know, who have anything unusual about them are going to become experts pretty quickly mm-hmm. in this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
And look at all the stuff.
But I just think it's fantastic that she's sharing her story
yes.
out there and
very you know. Valuable to people who are going through the same thing or, you know. It's just a good blog.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, she's a great writer.
Yeah, it's a really good blog. That's what I think is so exciting about this new media.
Yeah.
Everybody has a chance. You don't have to be a doctor.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I have a YouTube video.
A video
of
the week.
This
why did you, out of curiosity, type A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I... Right after that?
Because that's what it's called.
It's called
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z.
That's the name of it.
That's the name of the video. I found this on the Bundlo blog. We talked about Bundlo a few months ago.
So what is going on here?
This is a father and a son painting the alphabet together. And I should warn you that the credits to this are a little long.
Well, are they at the end?
No, the credits. Those are the credits because he's writing the title,
right,
which is ABCD.
Oh my goodness! He has to write them all out. All right, let's skip ahead.
But yeah, it's funny. Like
so now they both have a Japanese black ink
mm-hmm.
and Japanese brushes and mm-hmm. paper. So they're going to do some sort of calligraphy? What are they going to do?
They just are writing each letter of the alphabet together.
So
the father writes
son.
It, and then the son writes it.
Oh.
It's a really cool video.
Is mom holding the paper?
It says in the credits he's holding the paper.
And the son is trying to do an A. Okay.
Yeah.
Good A.
It's cursive letters, by the way.
Oh, boy. So the son is young.
Yeah. I don't know how old he is.
I would say the father is a calligrapher.
Yeah. He is an artist.
Yeah.
It's just a cool video to watch. And
oh, it's so sweet.
Oh, watch with
goodness.
Your kids, too, I think.
Yeah.
It would be fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, and the boy, for some reason, likes a little curly cue at the end of everything.
Uh-huh, yeah.
He's like big, bigger than the curly
The letters cue. Don't necessarily always look right, but they're much better than my kids' letters. Well, actually.
You think he's like two or three, the little boy?
Maybe like four. I don't know. Three and a half.
So
the E was pretty good, wasn't it?
A good E. Look at that F the dad did.
Yeah.
Oh, the
his
son
F
is a good
is pretty
F.
good too, yeah.
Son's F is more legible.
And this is paint. This isn't like a crayon
so
or something.
Fun.
So
what a fun video. That's A B C D E F G H I J K L M N O P Q R S T U V W X Y Z. Wow.
We'll put the link to that in our show notes.
Hand one is Gratus W. Wouters, Amsterdam, Netherlands, 2003. Hand two is Job Wouters, Leiden, the Netherlands, 1980. I don't understand how that happened. Oh, that's maybe their birthday.
Oh.
So, okay.
He was born.
Gratus was 5 years old then.
Oh.
Yeah, early 2008. And they're Dutch.
Oh.
There you go.
All right. right. So, yeah, I found that on the Bundlow blog. Bundlow is a site where you can keep memories of your kids. And, yeah. So thanks.
Something, when you see something like this, I almost wish YouTube were a better site for great. This is art.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
YouTube makes it kind of junky feeling a little bit.
Well, and it's funny because I was complaining about the credits. Like, it deserves to have credits, right? I mean, we're living in such, we're living in such a world that we're like, credits on YouTube? Like, I don't care who did it.
What they should do is put that at the end. That's all.
Yeah. Right.
You know what? I'm going to do a remix.
Okay. Do an A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z, remix.
Z, Y, X, W, V, U, T, S, R, Q, O.
So
that's hard to do backwards.
It is. Yeah.
That's because I'm differently abled.
I emailed you a recorded question that someone sent about the Kindle.
Yay,
Did you find that?
Yes, yeah. I have it right here.
Hey there, Megan and Leo. It's Doug from the Geek Acres podcast.
Hey, Doug.
I just want to run something by you. As a geek dad of a youngster who is just starting kindergarten this year, I'm curious, what do you think is the likelihood that by the time he reaches his senior year, that he'll be using a device like the Kindle to carry around his textbooks? I mean, I think we've seen this before, talked about, you know, the electronic books and replacing all of the heavy stuff that's in their backpacks. But I'm just curious, especially now that you've had a chance to use yours for a little while, Leo. What do you guys think? Thanks for the show. Bye.
I am of mixed opinion on the Kindle. Kindle is the electronic book reader, the e-book reader.
Do you like yours?
Well, I read a lot on it. I have, you know, I got it initially because I traveled a lot, and I don't travel anymore.
Mm.
Well, or less anyway. I don't have to go to Canada anymore. So,
have to go to Canada anymore?
No, did I tell you they canceled the show? Yeah.
Oh.
I didn't mention that, did I?
No.
It's perfect timing because exactly the same time as they decided to stop doing the show, they want to do a live show. So they need somebody in Canada to do that.
Oh.
And I think that's the right way to do it. I want to do a live show. I can't do it in Canada, so I'm going to do it here. We're going to do it downstairs. I'm going to give you a tour after
Great.
The show. And in fact, I put a little video up on the web. People can see I see it at my blog of the new studio. We're just beginning. There's, you know, but what was I saying? Oh,
you were saying
Kindle.
The Kindle.
Well, you'll see when you go downstairs that I have, among other things down there, a lot of books, including the 20 volume Oxford English Dictionary. Now, you can get that on CD, but there's something about having it on paper that's just magic.
Yeah.
And I think especially for students, the ability to annotate in the margins and write. I remember when I was a kid, I went for a couple of years, 7th, 8th, and 9th. I went to a private school where you owned your book.
Mm-hmm.
The public schools, of course,
right? You have to give them.
They use it for 20 years.
Yeah,
and so it's fun to go through my kid's book and look at all the people who've owned it. In fact, when he was last year and he was in 6th grade, he had Patrick Scoble, who's Robert Scoble's son's book.
<that's laughs>
it was pretty funny. But when I remember how much I loved it. When I went to Moses Brown in 7th, 8th, and 9th, that we had our own books because I put a lot of marginalia in there.
Yeah.
Some of it's silly, but a lot of it was useful.
Right.
There's a lot to be said for the ability to take pen to paper and annotate and underline.
But you can annotate using the Kindle, right?
Not the same. There's nothing like having your book where you've used a yellow highlighter and you've highlighted important passages. You can flip to it. I just think there's a lot of value to paper.
Yeah.
Now, the advantage, and I think school boards will go for things like Kindle because they can, you know, books are very expensive.
Right.
And they can save a lot of money. One Kindle device, even at $400, is going to save you money over a period of time.
Yeah, but a long period of time, right? I mean, the books are not that much
cheaper.
Well,
that's true. You'd have to buy... Well, yeah.
They would probably give some kind of discount.
They'd have
to
figure out a way to do that.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not anti-Kindle. I'm not anti-electronic book like some people are, but I think I love books. I love turning the pages. So,
you know, look, the Kindle's like audiobooks. It's another way to read a book.
Mm-hmm.
I love audiobooks, but it's not the only way I read books.
Right.
I love my Kindle. And actually, I'm reading more Kindle than I am paper books, but there are times when paper is appropriate. A school application is an interesting one. I'm still kind of in favor of paper books for the kids, even with those heavy backpacks.
Yeah.
Good question, though. A really interesting question. Thank you, Doug.
Here's an email from Donna. She said, your save idea this week was about renting toys. We talked about Baby Plays a few weeks ago. The place was like Netflix
and
for toys.
We were kind of confused about the merit of that.
Right. She says, our local Head Start program has a lending toys program.
That's how it should be done.
Check out toys for 1 month and renew them two more times. I teach parenting in a high school that has over 60 students on free and reduced lunches, so I stress ways for them to get quality educational toys for their children whenever they have them. So
that makes more sense.
Yeah, so I think that is really interesting.
Your oldest is in a Montessori.
Yes, she
is. And one of the neat things about, the things I love about Montessori is the notion of works. Maria Montessori thought this up, where there's an educational, it's essentially a toy, an educational project. And what happens is the kid does it, is done with it, moves on to another one, moves on to another one, moves on to another one. It's in a way the same idea. Yeah. I like that idea.
All three of my kids are actually in that school. The boys have not gotten kicked out yet.
Congratulations.
They did bite one of the teachers.
Did they?
Puck bit one of the teachers. I know.
Oh, it's okay.
But not one of the other kids. So
better a teacher than a kid. So how does, your boys are pretty little. They can't do
They're
works.
Three.
Do they do works?
They sort of do works. I think, they kind of do. They have simpler ones for younger kids.
I think works is such a great idea. I wish they did it all the way through college.
Yeah, I know.
Our daughter went to a Montessori preschool, then a normal kindergarten through fourth grade, then a Montessori fifth grade. Where they still do works. It's very interesting, but they're getting more and more of a normal curriculum.
Right.
Too. Yeah.
Do you want to try one of those voicemails we have?
I got a lot of them.
Let's try. We haven't listened to
Are you
to
ready
yet,
to listen
so.
To a voicemail?
Yeah, this is unedited, I guess. You know? Straight from the press from St. Louis, Missouri, actually.
Hey, Megan and Leo. This is Karen Arnold from St. Louis, Missouri. I know you were interested in finding a homeschooling resource, and there is a very good St. Louis mom blogger named Dana Lash, and her website is momalogs.com, and I believe that's MAMALOGUES.com.
Oh, like
dialogue. And she often writes about homeschooling her two sons, and she was a columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch for a long time. So be a good resource. Love the show. Thanks a lot. Bye.
That's really interesting. I was going to bring up homeschooling too, because there was a recent in California, there was a recent
shocking.
Yeah. I don't know. It wasn't a law that was passed. A judge ruled
there was a court case, a very narrow court case, I might add, about a kid, who was homeschooled, but it was an abusive situation. The judge ruled much more broadly, I think over broadly, that all homeschooling was illegal unless it was by accredited teachers.
Yeah, a teacher with credentials.
And this completely undermines the homeschooling because homeschooling is being taught by a parent.
Right.
Now in California, and I'm sure this is true in other states, you don't have to be, but you're often associated with an accredited school of some kind, generally for homeschoolers. But it's not required. And California specifically, there is no restriction about what you can do in homeschooling, which I have mixed feelings about. Not everybody is a great teacher. There are various reasons why people would bring kids home. The situation I would worry about is a parent who doesn't want their kid to learn anything modern. And I'm not just talking about evolution, which, of course, is one of the hot button topics. But, what if there's a parent who says algebra is a work of the devil? And the kid doesn't learn algebra.
I think that.
We all think that, but that still doesn't mean you shouldn't learn it. So that's the extreme case. But I was actually shocked by this decision.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what the upshot's going
to
be.
And I think it might be, I've heard that it might be overturned.
Well, I think they'll appeal it. The problem is this case is not the right case to be appealing
right,
it.
Right, exactly.
This is a case where the kid shouldn't be homeschooled, in my opinion. But the judge was overreaching. And I don't know if that means all of a sudden you can't homeschool in California. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know either.
So Mama Logs is a site by Dana, and it looks really cool. Urban Soliloquy. It's much more than just homeschooling, actually. Very interesting.
Yeah, so
we should get her on.
Yeah, I'll look into that. So thanks for that.
This is a neat blog. She's a good photographer, too, I might add. So there's a lot of photos here, and she's been doing it since 2004, which is always a good sign on a blog.
Yeah. All right. I have another email from Micah from Endwell, New York.
I'm sorry. I have to point this out.
Okay.
This is a momalog. She has a picture of a raccoon and a picture of herself. She says, below are two photos. Both feature ridiculously dark circles under the eyes. I'll let you choose which is me. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's funny.
That's very funny.
This is from Micah from Endwell, New York. We recently went on a road trip with our twin 21-month-old boys to an amazing museum in Rochester, New York called the Strong National Museum of Play at strongmuseum.org.
I'm liking it already.
It's a giant kids museum that, as they say, explores play in order to encourage learning, creativity, and discovery.
Neat.
And also, it was also great to take the boys where they could just wander around and do whatever they wanted. I feel like we're always in situations where they're strapped in a grocery cart or a stroller at a store or constantly being told, don't touch that, don't go in there. It was nice to be able to let them be free and lead us through the museum. I think that is totally true. I really feel that with my boy. With twins, it's really hard.
Many regions have places like this. We have the Exploratorium in San Francisco. We have the Discovery Museum also. San Jose has a wonderful kids museum.
Yeah.
There are museums, it seems, in a lot of metros for kids. And I think this is a great idea.
Yeah.
I really like this idea. This is, they have the Grossology. Right now, Grossology is there.
Oh,
do you know about this one?
I remember those books.
Yeah.
There,
yeah. It's, I think this is a touring exhibit. It's the impolite science of the human body. You know, burps and, you know, it's fun. Kids love this stuff. Boys especially love this stuff. Girls too.
All right. Should we listen to one more voicemail? What do you think?
Boy, you're really pushing it on this one. Okay, let's try another one. We're good luck so far.
The first one was so good. Let's listen to another.
Hey, Megan and Leo, this is Jay from Pennsylvania, and I was just listening to Jumpy Monkey. And one question I had is about Catherine Trueblood's book, The Baby Lottery. Is you asked her all about how to promote a book, but you never talked about what her book is about, except for a brief mention about the first part when she's talking about
What is Trueblood's book about? Did we mention
it? I thought we did, but maybe we didn't.
I apologize because I got over focused on the notion of you know, publishing and promoting your own books.
So. I wrote a review of it on my site, but it's basically the story of six college friends who are kind of leaning into their 40s, somewhere in their mid 40s, and dealing with kids and divorce and infertility.
I think we mentioned that actually.
Yeah, and just sort of, I found it fascinating because, you know, it's just really tells that story of, just because your friends are friends with you in college, you go through all the different experiences, and you know it's hard to navigate those without friends. And I thought that was interesting.
And one of the reasons you might have felt that way is she did actually read a passage, a fairly long passage of the book, which you decided not to air because it was about donating at a sperm bank, and it was pretty graphic,
right?
And we decided that, well, people listen to this with their kids in the car and so forth. We just didn't want to get so graphic. And we told Kate before, and she was fine with that. She understood. She did a great job.
It's a great book. And you know, when you're reading by yourself, I didn't really think about the fact that
it's a little different.
Offensive to some people.
And we want to preserve our clean tag. And it's just a decision that I made network-wide pretty much to keep the adult stuff out of it so that everybody can listen. Anyway, that's part of the reason why you didn't get much of a sense of the book, I think, is we just had to cut that part out.
Right. All right, I think that's it, Leo. I think we've used up all our time.
You know one thing we haven't done enough? Set the phone number.
Okay, you say it.
707-981-4602. Call our Grand Central number. We just love it that you listen to the show. We'd love to hear more from you. You can email Megan.
Megan at twit.tv.
And even send her audio. That, you see how well that works.
Right, and that's Megan at twit.tv.
No H.
No H and
no
only one A.
No X's.
Not two E's.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we thank you so much for joining
us.
Have a great time parenting. Good luck. We'll see you on the other side next week. Bye-bye.